Welcome to Hanchuck Targets History. I'm your host, Tim Hanchuck. Thanks for joining me this episode. You know, I've been teaching high school history for way too many years, and I love talking about this stuff. So let me share with you some interesting, unique, and little-known historical events. I know you'll be entertained, and if you're not careful, you just might learn something too. So, let's lock and load and take a shot at that target of history and see what we can hit. Let's take a walk down range and see what the target shows us. Well, it looks like today we hit on the story of Johannes Gutenberg and his printing press. Now, if I was to ask the question, who invented the printing press? Many people would say that it was Gutenberg. Of course, other people would, no doubt, chime in and say, no, it wasn't the printing press he invented. It was movable type for the printing press. And to those people, I'd say, well, you're kind of sort of right. See, the thing is that both the printing press and the idea of movable type existed well before Gutenberg. What makes old Johannes so special is that he found techniques to print on a press with movable type that were efficient and easy enough to be employed on a large scale. Let's see how this happened. To start things out, we first need to ask if there was even a need or demand for the ability to print in massive quantities in the 1400s. The answer is a resounding yes. Up until this late medieval period, books in Europe were produced by hand copying. This took an outrageously long time and made books outrageously expensive, so much so that only the very wealthy could afford them. But during this time, we see a sharp rise in education and literacy among a growing middle class. This in turn caused a sharp rise in the demand for books and other printed matter, a demand that simply could not be met through hand copying. Okay, so the demand is there, but was the technology to do this available in the 1400s? It certainly was, and that's what we need to look at next. Let's start with the press itself, the screw press that allowed direct pressure to be applied on a flat plane had been around, it seems, forever. Records indicate that in Europe, the Romans introduced its use in the 1st century AD. They employed it for a number of purposes, such as pressing grapes for wine and olives for oil. It was also found in urban settings, being used to print patterns on cloth and for woodblock printing on paper. As for movable type, well, this idea had existed prior to the 1400s also. The concept of creating text by using individual letter characters had been kicked around since at least the 1100s. A known example of movable type printing from that time period can be found during China's Song Dynasty. The Korean Goryeo Dynasty from the 1200s also tried movable metal type printing. Although many historians suggest that neither China nor Korea used this process very much, because on top of the fact that both languages were printed using logographic writing systems with hundreds and hundreds of characters, it also didn't have the efficiency or quality needed to become widely accepted. Perhaps the most important advance in the history of books prior to Gutenberg was the codex format. When you think of a modern book with covers and pages bound together, what you're essentially thinking of is a codex. This format originated during Roman times, and by the early Middle Ages, like around AD 500 or so, had completely replaced the ancient scroll format. The codex certainly holds considerable practical advantages over the scroll. It's far more convenient to read. You set it down and you turn the pages. It's more compact and easier to store, either stacked or stood on end. And it makes a more efficient use of its materials. Writing or printing can be done on both sides of the paper, unlike one-sided scrolls. And speaking of paper, that was another development that opened the door for printing. Medieval paper makers had begun to mechanize the manufacture of paper in the late 1200s with the introduction of water-powered paper mills. This allowed for a massive expansion of paper production and replaced the slow, highly labor-intensive handcrafting method that was used in China and the Muslim world up to that point. By the end of the 1200s, parts of Italy began to be known as paper-making centers for Europe, and their increased production drove down the price of paper to 1/6 that of parchment. Paper became even cheaper during the 1300s, as large-scale paper production continued to spread to the German states and elsewhere in Europe. Okay, great, but what about Gutenberg? Well, we're not 100% sure in what year Gutenberg started to work on his printing press, but it was perhaps around 1436 or so. He was a goldsmith by trade, and we know he partnered with Andreas Dritzen, who was a gem cutter, and Andreas Hellman, who owned a paper mill. Because he had been a goldsmith, Gutenberg had the skill and knowledge to work with various metals. After some experimentation, he devised an alloy of lead, tin, and antimony with which to make his type. This alloy proved to be extremely durable while still being relatively easy to work and would produce high-quality impressions. To produce these metal types, Gutenberg created what is considered one of his most important inventions, a special hand mold or matrix. This allowed for the quick and precise molding of new sets of type. His early molds had about 290 separate letter boxes, the alphabet letters, of course, in both capital and lowercase, and then a variety of special characters, ligatures, and punctuation marks. When you have a chance, go into your computer's character map for each type of font, and you'll see what I'm talking about. So Gutenberg had found a way to create high-quality type in large numbers. His next major breakthrough was to separate typesetting and printing into two separate work steps. This division of labor allowed for specialization and thereby increased efficiency. Typesetters got quicker and more efficient at setting type, while printers became more adept in operating the actual press. To us, this seems rather obvious, but when Gutenberg did this, it was quite an innovation. Gutenberg is also credited with the development of an oil-based ink that proved to be more durable than the water-based inks that were being used at that time. As printing material, he of course used paper. Remember, it was quite inexpensive. And also vellum. That's what we'd call parchment. When Gutenberg sent to print copies of the Bible, for which he's probably most famous, he even experimented with using different colors of ink for some of the page headings. This can only be seen in some of the Bible copies. Gutenberg is also said to have designed the layout for the main Psalter, which was printed by his successors in 1453. This work saw rather elaborate red and blue printed initials as page headings. Okay then, how did it all work? Well, first of all, the type of screw press Gutenberg used was around 5 to 7 feet long, about 3 feet wide, and almost 7 feet tall. A typesetter, or compositor, would select the appropriate metal letters, arranging several lines of text at once. These were then placed in a wooden frame called a galley. Once the desired pages had been completely set, the galleys would be laid face up in a frame, which in turn would be placed on the flat stone bed of the press. The metal type would be inked by using two leather balls stuffed with wool. Each was about the size of a grapefruit and was made of dogskin leather. This was the leather of choice because apparently it has no pores, which makes sense when you stop to think about it, because dogs don't sweat, do they? So anyway, these balls were inked up and then pressed on the text to apply the ink evenly. Too little ink would cause a poor impression. Too much would create smudges. So it actually took some skill to do this quickly and correctly. With the inking done, it was time to load the paper. A damp sheet of paper was positioned on a flat frame called the tympan. Damp paper was used because it allowed the type to bite into the paper better. Small pins on the tympan surface helped hold the paper in place and served as guides when it came time to print the page's reverse side. A frame called the frisket was closed over the page to also hold it in place. Think of that like a thin picture frame around the paper's edges. The entire tympan was hinged at its bottom, and it was now folded down so that the paper lay on top of the ink type. A small mechanism rolled this entire assembly under the platen. The impression is then made by the turning of a screw that forced the platen down upon the paper. To turn the screw, a long handle called the bar or devil's tail was pulled. If the press was set up well, the springiness of the paper frisket and tympan would cause the bar to spring back and raise the platen on its own. Then the bed was rolled back out, the frisket and tympan were opened, and the printed page was removed and hung to dry. And then repeat with a new piece of paper, and repeat and repeat. A couple of guys operating a press such as this could crank out about 3,600 pages a day if they had any kind of skill at all. So what does this all mean? Gutenberg's invention of mechanical, movable type printing had a profound effect on society. One might say it created a printing revolution. From Gutenberg's single shop, printing activities spread like wildfire. By the end of the 1400s, printing was going on in hundreds of cities across most of Europe, from Spain in the west to Poland in the east. From this time onward, we may assume that the printed book was pretty much in universal use in Europe. Also by the end of the 1400s, it is estimated that printing presses throughout Western Europe had already cranked out 20 million copies. And estimates for the 1500s put production to at least 10 times that amount. Take Erasmus, for example. It is known that at least 750,000 copies of his works were sold in his lifetime, and he died in 1536. The rapidity of typesetting and printing, as well as a sharp fall in paper costs, led to the first newspapers being issued. Evidence shows us that the first weekly newspaper was published in Strasbourg starting in 1605. The first daily newspaper came out in 1650 in the city of Leipzig. It's too bad that nowadays newspapers seem to be an endangered species. On top of rapid mass production of printed materials, the printing revolution also helped contribute to the scientific revolution, which in turn led to the Enlightenment. Communities of scientists and scholars could easily share their work through the establishment of scholarly journals. Also because of the printing press, authorship became more meaningful. It was suddenly important to know who said what and when they had said it. Before this time, the author of a work was seen as less important, since a copy of, say, Plato's works made in Oxford would not be identical to one made in Paris. It is unfortunate that for many works prior to the printing press and the printing revolution, the name of the author has been entirely lost. Because the printing process ensured that the exact same information fell on the exact same pages in each copy of the book, the use of page numbers, tables of contents, and indices came into common use. That's not to say such things hadn't been used before this time. They had, though just very little. The printing revolution also caused a change in the process of reading. Up to this time, with literacy rates low and printed materials in low supply, most reading was done orally. One person who knew how to read would read aloud to a group of listeners. But over the next few centuries, oral readings gradually changed to silent, private reading. This resulted from a dramatic rise in literacy, brought on by the wider availability of printed reading material. We can also argue that the printing press led to the decline of Latin as the language of most published works in Western Europe. Latin was replaced by the vernacular language of each area. This in itself increased the variety of published works, and also helped to unify and standardize the spelling and syntax of these vernaculars. This, in effect, decreased their variability and promoted a more national language rather than regional dialects. One may even go so far as to say that the rise in the importance of national languages is one of the causes in the rise of nationalism in Europe, which was beginning at this time. So wow, Gutenberg's inventions led to this printing revolution in Europe, which in turn led to a host of other events, some of which I merely touched on in this episode. But delving deeper into the consequences of Gutenberg's actions, well, that would be another story. And there you have it, kind listeners. Thank you for tuning in. You know, if you enjoyed this episode, please tell your friends and check out some of my other episodes. And I very much look forward to talking with you again, hopefully next week.